Today's Keisho will be on Case 20 in the Book of Serenity. Case 20 is entitled Dijong's Nearness. Introduction. The profound talk entering into noumenon decides three and weeds out four. The great way to the capital goes seven ways across and eight ways up and down. Suddenly, if you can open your mouth and explain fully, take steps and walk, then you can hang your bowl and bag up high and break your staff. But tell me, who is this? Case. Dijong asked Feon, "Where are you going?" Feon said, "On a pilgrimage." Dijong said, "What's the purpose of pilgrimage?" Feon said, "I don't know." Dijong said, "Not knowing is nearest." Verse. Having studied to the full, it's like before. Having shed entirely the finest thread, he reaches not knowing. Let it be short, let it be long. Stop cutting and patching. Going along with the high, along with the low, it levels itself. The abundance or scarcity of the house is used according to the occasion. Roaming serenely in the land, he goes where his feet take him. The purpose of 10 years' pilgrimage, clearly he turned his back on one pair of eyebrows. So let me just, there's quite a bit to the koan. Much of it I'm sure doesn't make any sense. It was written just so you would have that response. You know. Dijong asked Feon, "Where are you going?" "I'm going on a pilgrimage." So what's the purpose of pilgrimage? You're going somewhere, maybe far from here. Feon said, "I don't know." Dijong said, "Not knowing is nearest." So, everybody again did a wonderful job this morning. Really beautiful, deep sitting in the Zendo. And again last night when people came into Dokusan, it was absolutely thrilling to hear what people were saying because everybody was really practicing wholeheartedly. Last night, one person came in. The contents of Dokusan, by the way, are confidential. That is to say, I don't ever discuss what happens in Dokusan with anybody, ever. So, in other words, even if I were taken to Guantanamo, you know, they'd never get it out of me, I swear. I don't tell my wife, I don't tell anybody, I don't even tell my teacher, my Genki Roshi and Webb. I don't even tell them. You know, so it's absolutely confidential, I hope it would be a good idea if you also kept the Dokusan, our exchanges in Dokusan, to yourself. It's not necessarily something you want to share with other people, and you haven't signed a contract, but. It's really between you and your enlightened mind, you know, and you can talk about the session in all sorts of ways, but you might not want to talk about Dokusan, what happens in Dokusan with other people. Having said all that, I don't think this person would mind if I shared one little piece. A person came in to see me in Dokusan, and I said, "How's it going?" And she said, "Wonderful. I'm listening, I've spent the day listening to the rain and the wind, and it's just so beautiful." And this person had come from basically university, setting. And I said, they don't study that up at the university, do they? You know, that's not on the curriculum. And she said, no. But really beautiful, right? Yesterday was like a beautiful day. Today is a beautiful day. Now, when you walk out of the Zendo, you look up at that blue sky, Lan Tian. That when we do meditation, our minds can become like that blue sky. There's not a cloud anywhere. And this person has been practicing very diligently for a number of, more than a year, actually a number of years. And has done sashin before, and basically was just really having a wonderful day. And I was so happy because I too was having a wonderful day, listening to the wind and the rain, with an empty mind, right? With an open mind, blue sky mind. It's just every drop of rain is like alive, right? So energizing, yeah. So beautiful, and I had to go to the store last night to get some bread. We were running out of bread and possibly oatmeal. I'm never really able to. I also am the cook, right, or one of the cooks. So I worry about whether we have enough food. And I'm never quite secure unless we have at least twice the oatmeal we need. So I wasn't sure we had enough oatmeal, so I had to get to the store and get some more oatmeal. And indeed, I made twice as much as we needed. But the thing is, I went over to the store, having spent the afternoon listening to the wind, and I went over to the store, and basically, you know, you go into the store, and it's a climate-controlled environment, and the Fleetwood Mac is playing on the sound system, right, you know, and so on. And I just thought, what a pity, you know. I mean, look, people are free to live their own way, right, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know, but it just seems like, what a pity, you know. It could be any season of the year. It could be any day of the year in here, right? You know, it's a totally artificial world. And of course, it's dedicated. I mean, I went to buy something, I have to admit, you know, and I was glad the store is there. But it's dedicated to, like, you know, consumption, you know. I just thought, what a pity. You know, probably not one in if there's 1,000 people in here, I'm probably the only person here, and it's not an ego trip, it's just a fact. I'm probably the only person who's going to go back and listen to the rain, you know? And most people would think, I mean, it's just true. Listen to the rain, you know, and get out of the rain, right, you know? But just to say, you know, if you said to somebody, I spent the day just listening to the wind and the rain, you know? I mean, most people they wouldn't know what to make of that, or maybe they would, you know, think you were a little odd, you know, but when you're practicing Zen and you all day long we're watching the breath or going into Mushin, a calling Mu, and you know when you come to Sesshin you have all of these it's like ghosts in your head, you know. When you come to Sesshin often you have all of these ghosts. So you know, maybe something isn't going right on your job, you know, and you come to Sesshin and, you know, all you can think about is that bad performance report or, you know, something like that, you know. You know, maybe something's not right in your home life, or maybe you're in school and you thought you were going to ace this course and it's turning out to be a real bear, you know. You can't figure out what to do, and there are all kinds of other ghosts too, you know, that are if you could look in your mind, it would be like this big closet full of ghosts, you know, really, and they're lined up for a long distance, you know, haunting, waiting to haunt you, each one, you know, jostling for the opportunity to haunt you, you know. And so some of Zen practice is working through, is sort of clearing away the ghosts, you know. So we sit down on the cushion and we watch the breath and we call Mu, and, you know, right under the surface is all of this stuff. You know, there's the boss's face, and there's when you see his face, you have a fear response or an anger response, or maybe you think of that course and you feel trapped. You feel like, you know, how am I ever going to get out of this? It's like being in a bad dream or something. And other things too, you know. You sit down on the cushion, and a certain amount of the first couple of days of sesshin can be spent working through the ghosts, you know. And most people never work through their ghosts, you know. They just get more and more ghosts in the closet, and it gets very crowded in there, and it becomes very hard to do anything in life, because we had this experience that made us afraid of doing this, and we had this experience that, you know. So after a while, it becomes very difficult to just be simply present in the moment without being haunted by all these influences, some of which we've actually completely forgotten about, but which still have a deep influence on our lives. So, you know, you sit down on the cushion and you call a Mu, or you watch your breath, and all this stuff comes up, and then after a while, you know, different things happen. I mean, one of the things that can happen is that you begin to get a lot of pain in your legs, you know. And nobody likes having pain in his or her legs, but it's an interesting thing. You know, there's a kind of elemental quality to that pain. It's unlike many other things. You can't argue it away. You probably can't imagine it away, right? So you can feel free to try this. You know, if you're in real pain, think of like your Hawaiian vacation or something, and say, "Okay, I'm back in Kauai. The waves are washed. You know, I think the pain will just eat that right up. You know, I don't think it'll work." So pain is interesting because it cuts through. You can't think your way out of pain. You really can't. You can't sit there and think about philosophy or politics. If your knees hurt enough, most of that stuff just seems like a total irrelevance, right? And the point of Zen is not to be in pain, but actually that encounter with pain is, believe it or not, it is like a door into sanity. Really, it's like a door into sanity. I know that sounds crazy in itself. It sounds insane to say that, you know. But it really is. It cuts through all the ghosts, you know. And suddenly, you're just in the moment with your pain, right? And even though nobody likes this, this is a very, very positive circumstance in terms of liberating yourself from your ghost. Because suddenly your boss doesn't seem that important, you know, screw him, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to survive here, you know, screw him, you know. And that's great. That's a big improvement over worry, tossing and turning, right? You know, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do? He doesn't like me. How can I, should I have him over the house? You know, blah, 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 you know. So this is a screw him, you know, I'm just trying to survive here. And this is so positive. This is like cutting through the ghosts, you know. And you sit down on the cushion, you straighten your back, you watch your breath, the pain comes, and it's very purifying. Believe it or not, it's very purifying. And by purifying, I mean clearing away the ghosts, you know. And now look, if you have pain, you're in the moment, you know. You're in the moment along with your pain, though, and that's the downside. And so what you need to do is fix your attention on the breath or on Mu, and hold it on that object. So when you breathe out, you just, whoa, see, And then you'll notice, if you haven't noticed this already, that when you breathe out, you will notice that at the end of your breath, there's just this little split second of cessation of pain. Please observe this for yourself. When you say, whoa, at the end of the breath, there's like this blankness or a split second of like stillness. Maybe that's the best way to describe it. And then your pain comes back. You know? So then you, and you'll notice, if you fix your attention on the calling to and breathing, you watch the breath and you go out with your breath, there's very little pain sensation during that interval. And then when you get to the blankness, or the stillness, I should say, there's like a still place at the end of your breath, there's going to be no pain for just a second. And then when you take in air, when you inhale, there's a pain sensation, and often there's a thought of some kind. So it's very rhythmical, you know, you go, whoa, and then there's a stillness, and then thought and some kind of there's a pain and some kind of a thought, you know, and then, but the important thing is that there's this interval in which it's possible to get out of pain. Now, one way to get out of pain is to just move. But the thing is, if you start moving, it's probably gonna snowball on you, right? So you think, if I just move my arm, if I just move my leg a little bit, the pain would go away. But of course, that's not true. By day two of a sesshin, you're now in about your 11th hour of meditation. You know, you have a lot of lactic acid in your muscles, and so moving them isn't probably going to help that much. It's okay to move. It's not like a crime, but you might find that when you move, there's the pain again. You know, so moving is not necessarily the solution. But if you can use your pain to sweep, you can use your breath rather to sweep your pain away. So you follow the breath out, and you reach this stillness. And you'll notice that there's like a certain interval in which there's no pain sensation, and then the pain arises. So what I would suggest is that you just keep sweeping the pain away, sweeping the pain away, sweeping the pain away. And if you are feeling pretty good when you sit down on the cushion, you've had a little nap, and you come back to the cushion, and you sit down, and you're feeling a little better, and you don't have so much pain, you know, you might say to yourself, well, maybe I'm through the pain. You know, that's unlikely. Okay, don't mean to discourage you. So realize the pain is probably coming back, you know. So you've got to get ready. And so what you do is, even before your legs start to hurt a lot, please start focusing on the breath, single-mindedly following the breath out. And eventually what's going to happen, it might not happen today, but eventually what's going to happen is the more you go out to that still place, the more still your mind will become. I promise you this is true. If you're in a lot of agony right now, this sounds like complete baloney, but it's true. I promise you, you know. If you just keep following the breath out single-mindedly, you'll notice there's this interval at the end where there's no pain. You just keep going back to that stillness. Your mind is going to get more and more and more and more still as the day goes on. And it might not happen today, but eventually you will find there's a place which is like the eye of a tornado, you know? All around you, it's like everything is whirling. But you're at this unmoving spot that's very serene. And the pain doesn't completely disappear. But initially, it's like somebody's screaming in your ear. And when you're at the when you're in the eye of the tornado, when you're in that stillness, that deep stillness, you'll notice that the pain is very remote. It's like rather far away. And it's no longer a big problem. And You may actually have a sit where your pain just completely goes away. Anybody who's done Zen long enough has these moments. I'll never forget that when this happened to me. I myself had quite a bit of pain. I've been doing this for something like 33 years now. And I sit every day and I love it. As I always say to people, the first 10 years are the hardest, you know, in Zen. So basically, you know, for the first, not 10, but for a fairly long time, I had a lot of pain. And I remember we did this retreat out in eastern Washington, and it was beautiful. We didn't have our temple then. We rented a place out in the desert. Believe it or not, eastern Washington is like a desert, like New Mexico. It's very beautiful. And we rented from the state of Washington like a camp facility, you know. And there was a room we used as a zendo, and there were bunk houses. And it was out in the desert. It was beautiful. I mean, at night we could hear the coyotes howling. It was great, you know. And it was like 110 degrees. It was very hot. We didn't have air conditioning, so that was a challenge. But I was in a lot of pain, and I remember just hanging on for dear life and working with my breath and working with my breath. And I remember toward the end of the day, I entered this state. I just got to that stillness very, very deeply. And it really was like a miracle. You know, my pain went away completely. It was just like I was indestructible. And I remember going into Dokusan and seeing Genki Roshi, and I said, "Genki Roshi, I can't believe it. It's like a miracle. My pain is gone." And I said, "I know now I'll never be in pain again." Yeah, I loved Genki Roshi. He didn't say a word. You know? Just, very good. Damon. And I conquered pain. I'll never, really, I actually said that. I can't believe it. But I, at the time, it seemed like I had. You know, I had, it was like a mirror. It was like magic. You know, it was like, I'll never have pain again. You know? And the next day, it was like, oh! You know, what happened? Actually, that has happened to me. I mentioned earlier in the week that we used to, I've done sesshin in like freezing cold. When we were building our temple up in the mountains of Washington State, we used to have sesshin in like basically unheated zendo. And this was like 20 degrees, you know. And it was really cold. And we were allowed, Genki Roshi, was pretty strict, but he let us wear our coats and socks. This was like a major concession from Genki Roshi, you know. So it was very cold, and I remember we had Dokusan in the kitchen. The kitchen was detached from the zendo, and that was heated. That had the cooking stove in it. I remember sitting in the Dokusan line, and snow was gathering on everybody's shoulders. That's the truth. So we were sitting waiting. We had, instead of going to Dokusan like this, where we just get up and go to Dokusan, what we would do is leave the room, the zendo, and go wait in a separate place for Dokusan. So that's what I mean by Dokusan line. So it's traditional in Zen temples for people to leave the main hall. Anybody who wants to go to Dokusan leaves the main hall, waits in another room, next to the Roshi or the sensei's room. But we didn't have a main hall, so we just lined up outside the kitchen. And as we were sitting on our cushions, like snow was gathering on our shoulders. I suffered terribly, terribly. But years later, I had this experience again after a seven-day sesshin, toward the end of a seven-day sesshin. You know, we all had to go out. At this time, we had like a heated facility. But, you know, part of the ritual was to go out on the last day in the freezing cold and so on, and do a ritual outside, you know. And my teacher was, you know, just dressed in his simple robe, you know, and And I just thought, well, what the heck, you know. So I actually went out in a robe just like this. It was cotton poly blend, you know, one layer, underpants, and sandals. And it was like a miracle, right? You know, I just thought, my God, you know, I'll never be cold again. Right? But not so. But we can reach this level of still mental stillness, where it really is possible to get beyond our pain. So please have confidence in what I'm telling you. It's absolutely true. And also, please don't see your pain as like punishment or disgrace. Or people have all kinds of reactions to pain. But please understand that Zen isn't about pain. But let's face it, almost anything you do in life is going to entail some pain. I mean, the first thing the Buddha taught was that suffering is a fact of life. You know, it's interesting, the Buddha didn't start by saying, let me tell you about bliss, you know. He didn't. I mean, he could have said, oh, I've got to tell you about enlightenment. Let me tell you about bliss. You know, let me tell you about, you know, how great it is to be enlightened, you know. First thing he said was, if you want to understand existence, you have to understand that pain is an inescapable, or he didn't say it, he said suffering is an inescapable element of existence. And so, you know, right there, this brings us back, this cuts through all the illusion, all the fantasy, but also all the fear, and it brings us right back to our relationship to the moment. And you can't BS your way out of it, you know, you can't pretend, you can't. You know, normally, many times we can BS our way out of things. We even BS ourselves. It's just a fact. We all do it. But sometimes, when you're in that elemental relationship with your physical pain, you can be in the moment in the most extraordinary way. I mean, when you stay in that stillness long enough, you begin, you know, the amazing thing is that not only does your pain go away, but your experience of many things changes. And everything comes alive. It's true. Again, if it hasn't happened to you yet, there are people who are in this room, besides myself, who have been practicing for more than a decade. And I think they'll tell you, if you ask them, I won't ask for a show of hands, but they'll say, yes, I have pain. So you might think, well, why after 30 years or after 10 years are they continuing to do this? Well, it's not the same as the pain you're experiencing now if you're a beginner. But it's the beauty of what happens after that. Because when you go into that stillness long enough, everything around you becomes alive. It's like, you know, yesterday, the person I mentioned earlier was sitting on her cushion listening to the rain and the sound of the wind. And because there wasn't all these projections and fantasies and fears, we call this in Zen unified mind in accord with the way. It's like everything is so richly alive. You know, the sense of, you might not think, oh, I feel very connected. But the liveliness of things is because the boundary between yourself and the world has gone down a little bit. And when we take that boundary down, we feel so much better. We feel so much happier. And things we might have thought of at one time as like boring. You know, if somebody had said to me, someday you're going to enjoy spending a day listening to the rain, you know, I would have thought, not a chance, you know, not a chance. You know. But now I realize it's just exquisitely beautiful. It's almost heartbreakingly beautiful. And it doesn't have an intellectual content. You know, it doesn't have an intellectual, I mean, we live too much in a world of ideas. And those two help to deaden the world around us. So this experience of pain seems so crude and maybe even cruel, But it's not. And as if you're in absolutely mortal agony, or if you're in moderate agony, you know, it's okay to move. So this isn't about like willpower. And if your mind is throbbing with pain, you should definitely move. It's not productive to be in agony. But there's a boundary, that there's a place where you're pushing against your discomfort. So you have, you know, your legs hurt, and you use your breath and you sweep the pain away, and little by little you're going to get into that stillness. And then sooner or later, you know, you're going to be listening to the rain and think, oh, that's so beautiful. Or you'll hear a bird sing. It's like heartbreakingly transparent, you know. And this is actually a great achievement, but it's also the beginning of like that's what Zen people mean by liberation. You know, the other thing I ought to tell you is that this is day two for many people who are here, and often if people don't have this experience of the pain disappearing or receding until day three. That's the truth. It's generally the case that people have their turnaround around late day two or early day three. So I'll be doing Dokusan, and day one people will come in and I'll go, how's it going? They'll go, okay, you know, I'm still thinking about my boss or something. Day two they'll come in and I'll say, how's it going? And they'll, you know, say, oh, geez, a lot of pain, you know. And then day three they come in and say, oh, I'll never feel pain again. But that turnaround is very predictable. It's like you can predict this is going to happen. And I've been doing Sesshin for 30 some years, so I've been doing at least 4 and often 7 or 8 Sesshins a year for 30 years. I couldn't do the math right now, but it's pretty predictable that by like the end of day 2 I'm going to feel a lot better, you know. And I'm going to have that experience of like, oh my God, everything is so alive. So, you know, sometimes it's not exactly on schedule, I have to say. You know, there's days where I'm going, where the hell is it? You know, come on, you know, out of my legs. But generally speaking, somewhere around the end of day 2, it's like I get up on day 3 and think, wow, I feel like every atom of my being has been massaged. It's really true. It's absolutely true. And it just feels wonderful. So please don't be intimidated by pain. If you run away from pain, you're going to run away from everything in life. There's nothing that's worth doing that isn't. It's a cliche, but it's absolutely true. Everything is a little bit that's worth doing is a little bit difficult. Difficult is a euphemism for painful, right? But there's pain and there's suffering, right? There's a difference. Because we don't have to be in agony if we can do what we call dropping the small self. So you know, when you're in your small self, you know, you're basically caught in very limited consciousness. You know? But eventually. You know, you have this turnaround, and it's like the doors open up or the walls fall down, and there's this beautiful connectedness to the world around you. And this is called dropping the small self. So this is going to happen, and when it happens, it's heaven itself. So what does this have to do with the koan? Where are you going? Around on a pilgrimage. What is the purpose of the pilgrimage? I don't know. Not knowing is nearest. If you go through this process enough, if you go through this process long enough, you develop a very different kind of intelligence and a very different kind of intelligence, that connected intelligence. It's very different. The intelligence of the small self, the intelligence of the self that's in pain and wants to get out of pain, is a very limited kind of intelligence, and it's the one most people spend all their time in, if that makes any sense. So, I mean, basically, ordinary consciousness is, you know, you get up and you read the paper, or you go online and you read Salon.com. You say, oh, he's a bum, I hate him, you know, I like him. That makes me mad, you know. And then you think, you know, how do I get a raise? Or, you know, I've got to get a better grade. I'm not putting it down, but this is like very limited intelligence. It's conscious mind. We say conscious mind. Conscious mind is interested in getting the self into a maximum position of advantage. Right? Conscious mind is really all about the self. It's all about the self, pretty much. It's like, how do I get this to happen? You know, how can I make this happen? And of course, it's produced amazing things. Who would have guessed that we could fly through the air, right? I mean, somebody figured out a way to fly through the air. And so that's remarkable. We all came down here in cars, which didn't exist about 150 years ago. But all the same, what we say conscious mind, or we say discriminating mind, thinking mind, is like self-centered mind. And it's very—it's basically all about maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain, and primarily for me, you know. So I don't mean to suggest that people, you know, haven't used discriminating mind to create things like the United Nations and things like that. So it certainly has its place, but it's little tiny mind that rests on top of a bigger foundation. And in Zen we call this big mind, or we say Buddha mind. There's a kind of a intelligence which isn't self-centered, and it operates unconsciously. See, and when you can get through your pain and your self-centered consciousness, and you get the walls falling down, it activates another part of your mind. It's activating what we say your big mind or your Buddha mind. You know, when you listen to the rain and you feel so alive, it doesn't have any intellectual content. There's nothing to it, for the small mind to appreciate. There's no theory of rain, there's nothing about it that you could say that might be interesting or exciting to somebody. What's happening is you're opening up this bigger part of yourself that is deeply connected to everything. And that's why you feel so good. It's like people basically are unhappy because they live in too small a mind. And when we get into the bigger mind, when we get into this non-thinking mind, this non-thinking intelligence, we begin to have this deep sense of connectedness and energy. So actually, even though thinking has its place, even though it's good to read books, it's good to read the newspaper, and so on and so on, and if you write papers, or that's please, do your best, that has its place. Nevertheless, as the experience goes, it can't compare to the richness of encountering the world through this non-conscious big mind. And the whole point of Zen meditation is to open the door into that unconscious holistic awareness, you could put it that way. And we do this more and more the more we practice. And the processing is unconscious, but you become deeply intuitive. And you can't normally trust your intuitions because you have too many ghosts in the closet. So you say, okay, I'll be intuitive, but often we're too haunted by our fears and our attachments and our traumatic experiences. But when we clear away the ghosts, you know, we begin to have access to this bigger mind. And it's quite remarkable. You know, people will come into Dokusan sometime, and they'll just say, I don't know how this doesn't make any sense, but let me tell you something. And they'll tell me, and it's exactly the right answer to their koan. The other day, I'm sure this person wouldn't object to my mentioning this. A person came into Dokusan and she said, nothing's happening with my koan. And I said, oh, okay, well, what's happening, you know, apart from your koan, what's going on? And the person said something, it was the answer to the koan, you know. In fact, the person had the answer a month ago. And I said something like, well, why didn't you tell me? And this person said, well, I didn't think it was the answer, you know. Small mind said not the answer, right? But big mind was saying, here's the answer. And so I was thrilled. I mean, that person's big mind was activating very, very effectively. But sometimes we don't know, you know, we don't fully notice it because we're sort of listening to small mind a little too much. So, anyway, it's odd, isn't it, that listening to the rain can be so beautiful and exciting and energizing. And you might say, well, what's happening? And basically, what's happening is you're getting in touch with your big mind. And the way to get in touch with your big mind is to sit still and watch your breath and move away from your thoughts and enter this blank or still state. And most wonderful things are waiting for you if you do that. And when you experience the world without all of these ghosts and all of these ideas and all of these screens, you know, it's right there. It's right with you, right? It's absolutely, it's the nearest, right? Just like in the koan, it's the nearest. So please continue to practice as you have been. Everybody's doing a magnificent job, really. It's just wonderful. And let's see what opens up. Let's see what big mind has in store for us, okay?